CinemaJaw is sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down. No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone. Get it for free in the App Store. And we thank them for their support. You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded from our respective homes in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy. And again, Matt, not sitting alongside us, is Fill Me In Phil. He's still out on vacation.
Yes, have no fear, Jawheads. Phil will be back next week. He's still a part of this show. But you know what, Rye? Everybody needs a vacation, dude.
I agree. He was going to be gone for 2 weeks, and we said, yeah, go have some fun, Phil.
You know, it's funny. It reminds me of our streak. I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back here, but we do this podcast damn near every week, and we've been doing it for over a decade, almost every week.
It's crazy. I mean, to be honest, and again, not to pat ourselves on the back, as you said, man, we probably average, when we looked back at it, about 4 shows off, like 4 weeks off a year, maybe 5. That's it. Maybe. I mean, pretty much every single week, we're talking movies here on CinemaJaw.
Yeah, and a lot of times when we do take a week, we like do kind some kind of recording. Yeah, here we are. We're patting ourselves on the back, right? But I'm proud of that. But so Phil, hell yeah, this guy deserves a vacation.
I agree. He said he was going to be gone for a little while. He circled the calendar, and he'll be back with us next week talking movies.
I miss him.
Matt, all month of July, we have been celebrating Scarlett Johansson. So this episode, the breakdown sometimes happens where we have new movies to watch. Matt was maybe going to be out of town later in the weekend. We had to move up the recording. So looking at it, the way it fell, we said, let's do a retro review of Ghost World.
It's perfect. You know, we haven't done one of these in a while. So it's fun to get a new retro review episode in. And you're right, Ryan. The timing just worked out perfectly to continue our celebration of Scarlett Johansson with the movie that most people point to as her breakout performance.
I would say most people would say Lost in Translation, but this did predate it. And I like doing retro reviews on anniversary years. Ghost World, Matt, 20 years old in 2021. Came out in 2001.
I can't believe it. What makes me feel even older is the fact that I actually watched this movie in Chicago. You know, most of the time when we're talking about old movies, it's like, oh, I was still on the East Coast when I watched it. Not the case. I saw it at Piper's Alley in Chicago.
Not even there anymore.
Not even there anymore. This may have been the first movie that Matt Kay saw in the theater in Chicago. In fact, I'm pretty certain it is.
Interesting. Continuing with Scarlett Johansson celebration this episode, we are going to play a round of Stump the Kabinsky, Scarlett Johansson themed.
I actually think I might know a little bit about ScarJo, so we'll see how that works out.
In addition to that, Matt, we celebrate her by naming our top 3 favorite performances of hers. That was fun to go through her filmography, huh?
It was, and you know, I always forget some of her like action stuff. So yeah, I think there's 3 that we're going to cross over on, although I think you might have one different choice that I still have yet to see.
Interesting.
Okay, we'll get to it.
Okay, so Jawheads, think of your favorite Scarlett Johansson performance. See if it makes our list. It is going to be a fun and Scarlett-filled CinemaJaw.
Yes, indeed.
Let's start off with the big news that Scarlett Johansson opens up her film, Black Widow, with an $80 million box office. This is the biggest box office opening since the pandemic started. Congratulations to Scarlett. And then also Disney, in something that was very strange, Disney actually released the numbers of how much money it made on the Disney Premier.
Their double dip.
Right, because you can do Disney Plus Premier, pay $29.99, and you get it at home. Usually studios do not release how much money they've made on the digital platform. For the first time ever, Disney announced it made $60 million at the Disney Premier level. So a total of $140 million opening weekend for Black Widow.
which makes it the, I think, one of the most lucrative, if not the most lucrative MCU films. I believe I've read that.
For opening weekend?
Yes.
It was a long time coming. I think a lot of people were just waiting for a big action film. And, you know, Marvel has a humongous fan base. So you mix the two together. I think everybody was dying to get out and see a movie such as Black Widow.
Oh, I completely agree. There's a lot of pent-up demand. I think you're seeing that across all industries. Movies are certainly no exception. People were ready for this movie in a lot of ways, too. Had the pandemic not happened, I'm pretty sure this movie would still have been a mega hit. You know, people were ready to see Black Widow get her solo treatment. I agree with some of the critics that it seems like it comes a little late, but whatever. It's better late than never. So you wanted to ask a little bit about Disney and this move that they made, releasing their digital numbers. I think it seems very convenient, doesn't it? Like, I think they wanted to bolster this movie. It is a hit. It's getting praised critically, if not praised, but at least getting passing grades, right? Mm-hmm. But they need those headlines. They need to push into the second weekend, right? So they're going to say, it's breaking all kinds of records. We're going to release the numbers on streaming just to show you. All it is a big commercial. This was a calculated move by Disney to release this. And no, I don't think this is going to be the habit from here on out.
I wonder. I mean, because we're seeing more and more movies released on the digital platforms at the same time. And people like to know those numbers, right?
Yeah.
People want to know what's number one, what's popular, so on and so forth. I actually saw that Amazon was advertising the Tomorrow War. Last time I was on Amazon Prime, there's a big banner and it comes on saying the number one streaming movie in the country. And it's this huge banner. And I'm like, how do they know? What, on Amazon? Or what are they talking about? It's just on the banner, the number one streaming movie in the country. And I agree with you. It just gets people to click on it a little bit more, people talking about it a little bit more. But $60 million, if that's what it made at the home market, is pretty impressive.
It makes you wonder, though, like, okay, so what did Mulan do? Was it a disappointment? Is that why they didn't release those numbers? What did Raya and the Last Dragon pull in? Even the Trolls World Tour, which was one of the first movies that got this treatment during the pandemic, we don't know exactly what it did. By all accounts, it was all three of those were successful. But it'd be right. Interesting. I hope they start releasing the numbers, but my guess is they won't, unless it's convenient.
Yeah, or it was definitely like a complete smash and they want to brag and get more people to see what all the fuss is about, right? Because that's what those numbers do.
Right. The box office thing is a bunch of companies that are not, you know, owned by the same conglomerate. So those numbers are available. But Disney, even though it's publicly traded, is still somewhat of a closed ecosystem, a closed black box, right? Same thing with Amazon and all the other streamers, Netflix. So you're not going to get those numbers unless they want to show them to us. And even if they do, you have to take the veracity with a grain of salt, in my opinion. And maybe that's cynical. That's just what I think.
I'm with you on that. But congratulations to everybody involved with Black Widow. It was big, big hit. And I'm just glad to see movies back, these kind of numbers getting thrown around. It's like, yes, it's back. People are going out to the theaters. It feels good.
It does.
I'll be out there tomorrow seeing Space Jam. And I'm actually just excited to go to the movies.
So. Nice. Taking my whole family to the new 400, our big return. We're going to see Black Widow again. So
nice.
There you go. There's some more money for Scarlett Johansson.
Speaking of Scarlett Jo, or as we call her, Scar Jo, it was 2001, Matt. Our president at the time was George Bush, and Scarlett Johansson was teaming up with Thora Birch in Ghost World. I saw this way back in the day. You saw this way back in the day. But truth be told, Matt, I have not seen it since. One time I watched it, it was back in 2001. So this was a great revisit.
Same here, man. Same here. Ghost World, as Ryan just said, came out 20 years ago. Wow. Back in 2001, Thora Birch was at the top of her game, an A-list Hollywood name, and Scarlett Johansson was an unknown. Hard to fathom. An indie comic book artist named Daniel Close had recently published his graphic novel, Ghost World, and he and director Terry Swigoff set about adapting it for the screen. The fortuitous casting of the above, with the addition of Steve Buscemi rounding out the cast, Ghost World seemed poised to be an art house darling.
How many times I tell you? No chef, no service. Get the hell out of my store. What do you think this is, Club Med?
It's America, dude. Learn the rules.
Loosen up. Yeah. Feel the music.
Ghost World. The underground comic book comes to life.
We have to get together this summer.
Yeah, that'll definitely happen.
Written by Daniel Klaus and Terry Zwigoff. Directed by Terry Zwigoff.
Do you serve beer? Any alcohol?
After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're going to wish you had 10 beers.
And it was an art house darling. The late Roger Ebert gave the film 4 out of 4 stars and wrote, "I wanted to hug this movie. It takes such a risky journey and never steps wrong. It creates specific, original, believable, lovable characters and meanders with them through their inconsolable days, never losing its sense of humor." End quote. Ghost World is about Enid and Rebecca, two recent high school grads who face the long summer after senior year when the real world looms. The pair of besties fill their days by treating everyone they meet with sarcastic apathy bordering on cruelty. When a personal ad about a missed connection catches their eye, they meet Seymour, played by Steve Buscemi. At first, the two toy with Seymour, but eventually Enid strikes up a genuine friendship and helps Seymour work on his romantic life, only to become jealous when he's successful. Soon, everything falls apart for Enid, and the movie ends in what some have interpreted as a very dark place. What struck me right away was how young Scarlett Johansson looks, which, I mean, I guess it makes sense, Rye, this was 20 years ago. But even given that, in this movie, she has more of a teenager look than an adult, which, again, makes sense. I think she was like 16 when they made this movie. We could throw that in the jaw box. The humor and the plot hold up completely, and the universality of the characters has made this coming-of-age black comedy a timeless cult classic. It's easy to see why this role was Scarlett's breakout. She earned several nominations from critic groups, the larger ones, actually. I think her honesty as a mean girl and her character arc made this a perfect role for her. However, it's Birch and Buscemi at the center of this picture. If I had to levy one criticism, it's that their relationship doesn't resolve completely to my satisfaction. There's one short scene, and I could have used more, Rye. After 20 years, I say Ghost World holds up, but I wanted to ask you specifically, Ryan, about that ending. What did you take away from the ending of this film?
Wow, that's a great question, and I'll tell you why it's a great question, Matt. It's also on my list to ask you what you thought of the ending of this film. Now, we're not going to go into full spoilers, but it's really not a film that has spoilers anyways.
Right.
The ending of this film, let's say we see this older man a few different times on a park bench, or I should say a bus, a bench waiting for the bus. And he's always there waiting. And Thora Birch's Enid at one point looks over and sees the bus finally come and pick this gentleman up and take him away. And then the final scene in the movie sees Thora Birch's character actually get on this bus and drive away. And it is open to interpretation. Is she going to art school? Is that the happy ending I'm hoping for? I've also read analogies online that it symbolizes suicide.
Yeah.
I had mixed feelings watching it a second time. I thought I was hoping for, I think the optimistic side of me was hoping that she's going to art school, but I saw it this time in much more of a darker tone than I think I did the very first time I watched this film. I definitely leaned towards, oh, did she hurt herself? Is this not going the way I wanted to? But it's open. How'd you feel about it?
Okay. It's okay. Here's the thing. I also did a little digging on this, and I found an interview with Daniel Close, who was one of the writers of the screenplay along with the director. And he said that was not his intention to have it be a metaphor for suicide. And he was very surprised at how many people took that away from the movie. But after hearing it again and again and again and again in all the Q&As he's done over the years, he can't deny the fact that, you know, this is real. A lot of people are getting it. Now, what I took away from it the first time, I honestly don't remember. But when I watched it this time, yeah, I don't know if it's suicide, but it signifies her death, you know? So Thor Birch, Enid, keeps seeing this old man waiting on a bus that isn't going to come because the bench he's sitting on says not in service. The bus line was canceled 2 years ago. He's right. An older guy, probably senile, right? That's why he's waiting for a bus that won't come. And she looks at him as something she can depend on. No matter what's going on in her life, he's always going to be there. And then one day, she sees him get on this bus, which to me is a metaphor for him dying, right? He's no longer there. That piece of stability in her life is gone. And a lot of things have been going wrong for Enid at that moment. So then when she gets on the same bus, and this is also like a bus that would never come.
Right.
I think it's kind of obvious that that's what it means. Like, what else could it mean?
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it, I wasn't expecting it to go for such a dark theme, even though it is a dark comedy and does tackle some, you know, darker issues. I still didn't think the ending was going to go there. But this time, watching it, I was struck by the fact that where else would she be going that would really make sense, right? I mean, the art school is a bit of a stretch because it's not like there is some art school that she's supposed to be going to, you know, like, I mean, it's brought up, but it's not enough concrete evidence that she would get on this bus.
She had no prospects. She had no money.
Exactly. And she has no bags with her when she gets on this bus. It's just like she gets on and she leaves. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm reading this. Like, yeah, it's the death of the character. She's leaving this world. Just like what we saw the guy get on the bus, do the same thing. And then it's sort of leaves you with a sad note when you're thinking about that.
I have an alternative interpretation for those who are hoping for a palate cleanser, something a little happier, right? So Enid, first of all, the character never displays any kind of emotional distress. You know, obviously she reacts to the things that happen to her and she's a little confused and unhappy in parts of the movie, but she's never depressed, let's say, right? So it doesn't fit her character that that's what she would choose to do. I think she's also exploring so much in this movie. She's changing up her look. She follows people around. She's trying to figure things out. So when she sees the old man get on the bus, of course she's also going to get on the bus just to see if it takes her to a new adventure. So there's an alternative interpretation if you prefer.
And that makes me happy because that is the alley of what this character would do. So it does make me, all right, possibility.
Right. You could kind of look at it either way or both, you know, that's why this is a good movie.
Sure. So back to Scarlett Johansson here, because you bring up the fact that A, she looks very young. And then you also made it sound like Thora Birch was this A-list star. I wouldn't go that far.
No.
She was like a coming of age star. Like she was just bursting onto the scene, but it just basically ended after these two movies. And the two movies I want to reference here is American Beauty. She was the teenage daughter.
Right.
And then of course, Ghost World. So these were back-to-back huge films. And then it just sort of simmered out.
Yeah. I think there were a couple more in there, but yeah, really after the early aughts, she was kind of done.
If you asked me after watching Ghost World, who's going to have the bigger career, Thora Birch or Scarlett Johansson? I'm putting all the money I own in the world on Thora Birch after watching this film.
Oh, 100%. Me too. Me too. And to be fair, I was a huge fan of American Beauty. So that's a large part of what got me to the theater, you know, was Thora Birch's involvement because I just loved her so much in American Beauty.
This film, watching it, reminded me of the days just after high school and like early college when I would come home and I would be looking for work. But the days seemed like they were long and meaningless. You know, you'd have these days where you just like meet up with friends and talk. I forgot all about what that even feels like now that we're, you know, working.
Middle-aged men, yeah.
Yeah, working and got responsibilities and all kinds of things going on. It was refreshing to watch this movie and have that feeling again of them, you know, just going to the diner and literally be bored. They don't know what to do with themselves. Pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss those feelings too, man. Those were fun times. And everybody has those in their life, I think.
I did want to ask you a question, Matt, and it involves Steve Buscemi's character and what you thought of him. Seymour is portrayed as a dork in this movie.
Sure.
However, by today's standards, is he not the perfect hipster?
Yeah, I guess so. You can make that argument, but he was a little too old, right? I mean, hipsters are general. Well, there's plenty of middle-aged hipsters, I suppose. I think it depends on how you play it off, dude. But yeah, I mean, he's the prototypical hipster. So is Enid, really.
I know. I agree. I mean, they're supposed to be these oddball characters, and now it's like, well, they would fit right in with the hipster crowd right now.
Yes, they absolutely would.
Physical media in this movie plays a big part. Obviously, Seymour collects vinyl. This is how they come to meet him. He's at almost like a garage sale, their own kind of like garage sale, and he sells records, and he has a lot of valuable records.
This is his hobby, right?
Right, and Thora Birch's character, Enid, goes through a couple of records and she suggests something and he finally listens to this record and loves it. So physical media, art collecting, the actual physical art that Seymour collects also from old advertisement is prevalent in his apartment. And there is a scene where Enid and Rebecca, Scarlett Johansson's character, are walking through a video store looking for a movie to rent.
Yes.
And just, I think just watching this movie made me long for those days of physical media. And I know we've talked about this before. I still have hundreds and hundreds of DVDs and Blu-ray and 4K.
But when was the last time you popped one in? Seriously.
So here's the funny thing. Last night after watching Ghost World, I got such in the mood to put on a DVD. I watched the movie The Beginners with Ewan McGregor. And I've had it on DVD. I wanted to watch it for a long time. I should say Blu-ray. And Ghost World ended. I went up to my collection. I looked at it. I saw The Beginners. I pulled it out. And there was something exciting all of a sudden about it. I think because I just watched Ghost World, it made me excited to open up that Blu-ray, put it in the player, and watch Beginners.
Listen, man, I agree with you. There's something to that. I was in Target just shopping for household things, right? And I happened to see that they were stocking records. They were stocking LPs in 2021 at Target. And I was like, whoa, I guess there's enough demand for LPs, vinyl, that they could be sold at big box stores again. Never thought I would see that, but it's kind of back in a way.
Funny stat about that, Matt, because I have a vinyl.
I know, you also collection. Are into vinyl, yeah.
And I'm not crazy, Jawheads. I have select few. It's more a very small hobby for me. I certain records, and
you got like one milk crate full.
That's just on display. I do have probably about a total of about maybe six milk crates full of records.
Oh, wow.
And
I leave
one out in the living room for guests to peruse and put something on when I'm having cocktail and sophisticated scenes, Matt.
Right.
But I will say I came across an article, and I actually told my brother about this, that vinyl, so you can imagine, here came CDs, and it wiped out vinyl. What was that, late 80s when CDs came on, mid 80s,
yeah,
somewhere in there?
Maybe even very early 90s, right at the turn of the decade, I would imagine.
So since that point, all the way up until the last quarter of last year, 2020, CD sales have always been higher than vinyl. Last quarter of 2020, vinyl outsold CDs again for the first time in like 30 some years.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, so vinyl is that?
I read it in an article. It was online. And I was like, oh my God, it's crazy that vinyls come that far back. That, like you said, you're seeing it in Target. It's sold at Best Buy. I've seen it everywhere. And of course, if you live in like, you know, a cool area in the city somewhere, there's record stores everywhere. I mean, here in Wicker Park, there's like three record stores within walking distance of me.
Yeah. All this is to sort of analyze the character of Seymour, getting back to Ghost World here. So here's a question I wanted to ask you about Seymour. This is the thing that came up when I was in my dad's group when my kids were playing outside. The relationship between Enid and Seymour, it never struck me. Yes, it's obviously kind of a January, December sort of thing. Or what's the term? It's probably not January, December. You know what I mean?
What? No, but I know where you're going.
When an
but
older
I don't know
and a younger
expression.
Person get together. Yeah. May, December, whatever. So, but it never struck me as inappropriate because first of all, she's like 19, 20, right? And second of all, it's just such a genuine friendship and connection that, you know, winds up kind of going too far one drunken night, but one can really appreciate why these two are attracted to each other.
Watching it this time, I probably felt like a little creeped out by it. But
it's supposed
I agree
to be
with
a little
you.
Creepy.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're probably giving her an extra year there. She does graduate high school in the opening scene. So she's 18 tops in the movie.
Okay.
And Seymour says at one point that he's in his mid-40s. He alludes to that he's somewhere in his mid-40s. It does come up. Because I thought to myself, God, this is sort of weird. But I agree with you that the relationship is so genuine and seems very natural. That sort of sidesteps the idea of the creepy old man trying to pick up the younger girl. If anything, it's somewhat led by her finally wanting to be with Seymour, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. So I guess at the end of the day, while there are definitely creepy things to be said about their relationship, and it is probably inappropriate, I don't think either character was portrayed as doing something wrong. And it held up to me.
Yeah, what's wild about that too is then Scarlett Johansson 2 years later would go on to make Lost in Translation,
which is
still very young
theme.
And same theme where she gets into a very honest relationship with Bill Murray's character, who's, you know, 35 years older than her, 40 years older than her.
40 years older than her. So I read, because obviously I was doing the research around this film, and Scarlett Johansson was 17 during the filming of Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation.
Wow,
17.
Crazy.
It is a little, now that's a little creepy.
The way she talks has changed through the years. I think got more confident. Her voice in both Ghost World and Lost in Translation is the same. It's just a very like
deep
toned voice and very like short-winded. Both her mannerisms in Ghost World and Lost in Translation, the exact same. It's almost like she matured so much through the years. She's completely different from these two movies later on in her career.
You know what Scarlett Johansson is really good at, and I think we get to see it in this movie first, is a wry smile, and not wry as in Rye the Movie Guy, W-R-Y. She's got this sideways smirk that she does that I think she probably uses it with every character she plays. That's just kind of the way she smiles, but it says so much. Like there's a mischief in her eyes in certain scenes in this movie. That's just good acting. When you can bring the inner emotions of a character out in your face, she had some really good scenes. So
she sure did. When we do these retro reviews, we like to talk about some supporting characters and actors that pop up in the movie that were surprises. Now, when we look back, Ghost World, no exception. David Cross.
Boom.
right before he was about to hit it big with Arrested Development, pops up at the party that Seymour throws, and he thinks he's going to be brave enough to go up and actually hit on the two young girls at the party, and hilarity ensues. That was a great scene.
That was a great scene. Wonderful cameo. Goes on to prove the point that somehow I lost in a cinema war to you, that David Cross is the superior of the Bob and David team. He had all these crazy cameos. They were great. It was fun to see him. He's always hilarious, dude.
Another one was Terry Garr, who played the mom in Mr. Mom.
Holy crap. Was that Terry Garr as Maxine?
Yeah, she plays the girlfriend of Enid's dad.
Yeah.
Whoa. Great.
I just put that together, dude. I didn't know that was Terry Garr. Holy crap.
Yes. Yeah. So another great little cameo. I hadn't seen her in a long time. When she came out, I'm like, who is that? And I had to like go through and do the research. And then it popped up that it was Terry Garr. I'm like, oh, that's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Good researching, dude. Cause I was like, yeah, she looks familiar, but I didn't think to look it up. Well,
all right. Speaking of research, I got a few facts here for the retro review. Ghost World was nominated for one Academy Award, and that was for Best Adapted Screenplay. Did not win. What won that year was A Beautiful Mind.
I mean, I guess. Beautiful Mind also got Best Picture, so it seems like they could have given it to Ghost World.
The budget on Ghost World, $7 million. Box office, $8.8 million. So it did make some money in the theaters. You were one of them that saw it in the theater, as you said, Piper's Alley. I saw it as a rental.
Largely considered a box office failure. It is, you know, yeah.
In the movie, there is a joke about a chicken chain called Coon Chicken. And in fact, the Coon Chicken Inn was a real restaurant chain founded in 1925, Salt Lake City. However, it folded in the late 1950s and never changed its name to Cook Chicken as it does in the film.
Hmm. That is an interesting fact.
How about this? Christina Ricci said in an interview that she was actually originally tapped to play Enid, but a scheduling issue prevented her from doing it, so Thora Birch got the role instead. Could you see Christina Ricci in the role?
100%. In fact, there, if I'm being completely honest, have definitely been Christina Ricci, Thora Birch roles that I have confused at times in my life. Mm-hmm. So
very
yeah.
similar, yes.
Similar look, for sure.
And that's all I got for strange facts on Ghost World.
Well, you have done.
Yeah. Do you have a jaw-dropping moment?
The jaw-dropping moment for me is the latex hat that she buys, the Batman hat. It's the cover of the comic book. I think Thora Birch pulled that look off pretty well. You know, it was a funny moment. How about you?
For me, and this is, you got to be really watching the movie carefully because this moment happens very fast. And boy, did I laugh out loud and was shocked at the same time. They get in an argument. Enid and Rebecca are going out to look for apartments and they get in this big heated argument and they're yelling at each other in front of the apartment. And behind them, a pregnant woman walks into the apartment
yes.
and she's smoking. Drinking and smoking. That's hilarious. I mean, they don't even comment on the character. You just got to be looking in the background.
It's not even in focus.
No, it's not even in focus. But this pregnant woman is smoking and drinking a beer and she walks into the apartment. It's so damn funny.
The masterpiece video scene is another really, really smart scene. Like every line of dialogue in that, like between the customer and the clerk,
mm-hmm.
sings. It sings.
Absolutely. How about a movie poster quote, Matt?
After 20 years, the spirit of Ghost World is alive and well.
I like it. I went with, if you can't relate to 99% of humanity, this movie is for you.
True.
How many jaws?
I mean, Ghost World is a classic, dude. It's a 4-jaw movie in my book. How about
I'm high up on this one as well. 3.5 jaws for Ghost World. I saw this. We should say where we were able to view it. I watched it. We've talked about the service before, Hoopla, which is through the public library system. If you have a library card, bam, you get it. Free borrow. It's free on Hoopla. Matt, where'd you see it?
I went ahead and rented it on Amazon Prime, as a matter of fact. My first choice for rentals is usually YouTube, but they didn't have it, so I went to Prime.
There you go, Jawheads. If you see Ghost World, if you love Ghost World, you're a huge fan, and you want to comment on this review, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw, or you can always email us feedback@cinemajaw.com. Continuing on our celebration of Scarlett Johansson, we are talking her top 3 favorite performances. Let's kick this thing off, Matt.
Yeah, so at number 3, I'll kick things off with her. It's just a voice performance. Otherwise, it might have been higher.
But a great voice performance.
It's a great voice performance. I think when you close your eyes and you think about women with very attractive voices, right? Because Joaquin Phoenix's character falls in love with her voice alone. You really got Scarlett Johansson and Kathleen Turner at the top of the pile, right? There's some kind of breathy tone that she has with her voice, especially in this movie. And the acting is really good as well, because it's difficult to be disembodied and still convey so much emotion, because we believe that this AI falls in love. And then when things turn sour, feels bad about it.
Right. So
ScarJo does that without a face.
It's amazing.
It is. It's a really good performance.
I remember the year that her came out, I wanted her to get nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and she doesn't even appear in the movie, but I thought the voice performance was that strong, and it is that important to the movie.
100%.
Great one. I just know my luck. If I was going to buy one of those AI systems that Joaquin Phoenix bought in her, I would get stuck with like Roseanne Barr's voice.
Oh, Jesus. That would not be good.
Wouldn't be good at all. For my number 3, I went with Vicky Cristina Barcelona. This is a 2008 film. It was directed by Woody Allen. Scarlett Johansson would actually make a total of 3 films pretty close to each other. Scoop, Match Point, and Vicky Cristina Barcelona, all with Woody Allen. And she plays Christina, a young American woman who, along with her friend, Vicky, travel with a Spaniard named Juan, who's played by Javier Bardem, to a small town where he wins her over. And sparks really fly when Penelope Cruz, who is the ex-girlfriend of Javier Bardem's character, shows up. And her and Scarlett Johansson and Bardem are awesome on screen. It's funny. It's romantic. It's great. I love Vicky Cristina Barcelona. If you haven't seen this one, it's a must watch.
It's one of the better Woody Allen movies of the last 15, 20 years.
It's definitely up there for sure.
Swinging it around to my number two, and this is where I throw in Jojo Rabbit, which was a surprise from Scarlett Johansson, who I think at the time Jojo Rabbit came out, we mostly thought of as Black Widow. And she's fine in that role, but it's an action role, perhaps a little less demanding in the emotional acting category. Maybe. One could argue. So when Jojo came out, I don't know if we were expecting a whole lot out of Scarlett Johansson. And boy, were we blown away, at least I was, when she plays this mother with so much, you know, world weariness on her shoulders. But then again, she kind of has to put on the positive face and be a good mom and try to provide some kind of good childhood for Jojo, who's unfortunately obsessed with being a Hitler youth. It was great. And she manages to teach that empathy in a way that you know that Jojo is going to carry that with him for the rest of his life. It's just such a great performance, dude. I would equate it almost to, I would almost equate it with Roberto Benigni in Life is Beautiful, because, you know, obviously similar subject matter and sort of a similar beats to the character and what she accomplishes.
Brings a heavy emotion to that role. Good pick, Matt. Honorable mention of mine. On to my number two. And this is a film I still think you need to catch up with, my friend. 2013 sci-fi film, Scarlett Johansson, Under the Skin.
I do need to catch up with this.
Directed by Jonathan Glazer. She plays a character simply called the woman in the credits. She's an alien. And I just copied and pasted the plot from Google, which reads this. Disguising itself as a human female, an extraterrestrial drives around Scotland, attempting to lure unsuspecting men into her van. Once there, she seduces and sends them into another dimension where they are nothing more than meat. This movie is visually stunning. It's creepy and obviously known for, we talked about this when we did our favorite voyeurism films, known for the fact that they filmed a lot of these men in the van with Scarlett Johansson, and they had no idea that they were being filmed. And it wasn't until after they would finish a scene that the directors would come out and then get them to even sign the paperwork to be in the movie. Man, if you haven't seen Under the Skin, it's a must. Matt, you almost might have to just stop this podcast and go watch it.
I know. I really got to see it, man. That's like one of my biggest fears too, that I'm going to be like doing something and really enjoying myself and maybe making a connection with somebody and then somebody else cut and...
Wait a minute.
In front of me and like, oh, Jesus, you mean I'm not being seduced by Scarlett Johansson? This sucks. You know,
what's crazy is a lot of people are shocked that they think these guys didn't know, you know, that it was Scarlett Jo. But I mean, shocking. she's got a wig on. She's got makeup on. She's in Scotland. Who the hell thinks that it's going to be Scarlett Johansson in a beat up van picking a guy up and driving around? You know, like it just doesn't happen.
Right, right. Her disguise was her location and the fact that she's so famous, there's no way it could be her.
Such a good movie. And the music in there, oh man, the visuals when she's in this like black dimension, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I do have to catch up with it. I'll report back to you when I finally do. So that swings it back around to me at number one. Here we go. A movie where she stole the show and it was a very, very hard show to steal, Marriage Story. Adam Driver is her equal in this film, but at the same time, and maybe it's because for whatever reason, her action roles have made me think that she's not going to come out swinging, but she does, and it blows me away. So maybe it's an expectation gap, but I think of the two, she had slightly the better performance in Marriage Story.
Two strong performances, though.
Yeah, two really strong performances. It's a doozy. I recently rewatched the fight scene on YouTube, And man, does it hold up. I got to rewatch the entire movie because it's such a journey. It's a really good movie.
It's a tearjerker for sure. I left it off my top three, put it as an honorable because I thought Matt Cale probably have this at one or two.
Yeah. But pedestrian picks, Ryan.
Yeah. Very strong performance. So that leaves one that we have not talked about, alluded to this movie earlier when we were talking about Ghost World. My number one pick would be the 2003 Sofia Coppola masterpiece, Lost in Translation. And if people didn't see Ghost World, as we say, only 8.8 million at the box office, so not that many people quite saw it. They really got to know her as Charlotte, the young girl who is accompanying her photographer husband in Tokyo. She's lost, not sure what she wants out of life just yet. And that's when she meets one Bob Harris, played by Bill Murray, who is there to shoot a whiskey commercial. And he is obviously, as we mentioned, much older than her, but also finds himself lost at the moment. And a bond is made. It's funny. It's touching. And it has the whisper heard around the world at the end. Great way to end the movie. I just adored Lost in Translation from the time I saw it all the way through.
Remind me, does she whisper in his ear or does he whisper in her ear?
Matt, he whispers in her ear.
Oh, do you think maybe he just said something like, "You got a little spinach stuck in your teeth"?
I mean, I remember, it wasn't even that long ago. There was finally the story that this is exactly what he said. Somebody figured it out. And I remember thinking like, I don't know why people would want to know. It's best unknown. Come on, guys. That's what makes the moment so nice.
Yeah. Actually, I'm trying to figure out if I would want to know. If somebody said I definitively know what they say at the end of Lost in Translation, would I want to know? I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm not sure.
I agree. Only honorable mention that I have not listed between our two picks was way back in 2003. Still didn't really know her that well. Same year that Lost in Translation came out, just a few months earlier, she was in The Girl with the Pearl Earring, which was based on a best-selling book of the same name. And she
makes
is,
sense. She looks like that painting.
Yes, she plays the girl in the painting, and you sort of get to know that the painter was falling in love with this girl. And, you know, the relationship between the subject matter and the artist. And I remember being like, who is this girl? I still wasn't, you know, it was like, took all the way until I remember seeing Lost in Translation until I definitely knew the name Scarlett Johansson. Mm.
The only honorable I have, which we have not mentioned, is Lucy, which is largely a throwaway action picture, right? But for some reason, I had a lot of fun with it and it's slipped under so many radars. I think it's worth a spin. One of those unplug your brain and have some fun.
I agree.
That's it.
Jawheads, if we missed your favorite Scarlett Johansson performance and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet or you can email us feedback@cinemajaw.com. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have coming attractions of two movies, Old and Queen Pins. Oh, what a title. Plus, Stump the Kabinsky Scarlett Johansson themed. Stick with us.
Can't get enough of Cinema Jaw? Well, guess what? You're in luck. We are on Instagram, which you probably already knew, but did you know that recently we've been highlighting movie anniversaries, favorite celebrity birthdays, as well as movie poster quotes for movies we may not have even talked about on the podcast. So go ahead and check us out on Instagram. We are at Cinema Jaw, of course, and we hope to connect with you there.
We love talking about the movies, and we love hearing from the Jawheads. It makes us feel so warm and supported when we hear from you guys. Another way to support the show is by joining the Jawhead family on Patreon.
Yeah, guys, seriously, I think it's a lot of fun. We've been doing these extra bonus podcasts there and all kinds of fun rewards. And you know what? It just makes you feel like a part of the inner circle. So go to patreon.com/cinemajaw. Join us there. Get access to the bonus content at any level. And we thank you in advance. Hope to see you.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, Matt, celebrating Scarlett Johansson this week on the Jaw. we threw a one item into the fish tank. It had to do with Scarlett Johansson. So let's open up that fish tank. Matt.
Still no Phil in here, man.
Still no Phil. He is out 2 weeks in a row. He will be back next week. So I have to slave away. Jawheads, there's no way Matt's looking these facts up.
Yeah, boy, I couldn't use my thumbs to go to Google.
But I'm telling you, he won't do it, Jawheads. If we wouldn't, he'd be like, I forgot what we even threw in there. So luckily, trusty old Rye the movie guy looks up the facts. And there was only one. So it was very easy this week. And that was, how old was Scarlett Johansson when she made Ghost World?
My guess was 16.
Yeah, 15. 15 years old when she made Ghost World. She was 16 years old when it premiered and she saw the movie. So she was really young. Thora Birch is 3 years older than Scarlett Johansson. So they played the, you know, same age character in the movies as they can pull off. But Thora Birch, 18 when she's making the movie. Scarlett Johansson, only 15 years old.
Crazy. They do. I mean, they look like they're the same age, but I guess there's not that much of a difference when you're that young, you know?
Yeah. But boy, yeah, 15, so young.
So young. Well, she got started early. That's good for her, man.
I mean, usually the thing is actors play younger, right? So like the 90210 cast, which was a popular high school show, they were all in their 20s when they were playing high school students. The rule of thumb is you pick actors who look young to play younger. Right. You don't pick 15 to play 18 necessarily. You know what I mean? No, it's usually the reverse. Strange that they ended up picking up Scarlett Johansson at age 15 to play someone who just graduated high school.
Yeah, well, she's got that air of maturity about her. So
she does. It worked obviously the same as in Lost in Translation. It's that same vibe that she casts in both movies.
No doubt. Interesting. Well, we're
absolutely. While we're in the fish tank here, there's some coming attractions. We like to watch some trailers, discuss the trailers, and see if we're excited for these movies. Up first is Old. This is the new M. Night Shyamalan film in which a family goes to the beach and these kids start playing, what it looks like in the trailer. And at one point, the son disappears behind some rocks in the beach. And when he comes out, he's Alex Wolff.
Hey, man, wish that worked for me. They discover a body on the beach and wackiness starts to happen. Things are decaying. It seems like entropy is sped up and everybody is getting old, Ryan, faster than they normally would. Like minutes instead of years, to the point where the parents stop recognizing their kids. This is all in the trailer. Then they're trying to escape this beach, which they figured out is somehow cursed or causing this time warp, only to find out that it's easier said than done. They can't seem to get off this beach.
Right. In the trailer, it looks like one of the girls, maybe it's the daughter, climbs these rocks to get out, and she can't quite get out. I don't know why the rest of the family isn't trying to escape at the same time. Only one of them is climbing the rocks. I don't know why. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. What's terrifying is, at least from the trailer, like everybody keeps their same mental state. So these children are aging, turning their bodies are turning into adult bodies, but they're still like 7-8-year-old minds. That's got to be so scary, man. That freaked me out.
Well, it's cut in a way that is very thrilling. A movie like this, that you want to keep you guessing a little bit, show you just enough, get that taste to say, wow, I want to go see this one. It comes out, it says at the end there, July 23rd. I think it's still on target for that date. I'm excited for it.
I'm excited for it too, but I got to say, old, you know what's old? M. Night Shyamalan putting out crappy movies is old. This seems like a true return to form. And when I say return to form, I mean he is going for a movie that's going to be a mystery, that's going to have some kind of a major twist. I don't know, man. I've been burned so many times before.
Don't tell me Bruce Willis is going to come out and it ties back into Unbreakable.
Right, exactly. Something like that. We'll see. He's been getting better lately. So let's see if he can continue that trend.
Both excited for Old. Also released was a new trailer for a film called Queenpins. It's a crime movie, but it's overall a comedy. It stars Vince Vaughn as a FBI agent trying to solve the case of coupon stealing. There's some sort of major scam going on with a couple of people who are stealing coupons and then selling these coupons, I think, to other people to use. And these could be for free items, so on and so forth. And it ends up racking up tons of money. So it's a coupon scam that is going on.
It's a coupon counterfeit operation, basically. And they show them driving Lamborghinis and, like, you know, making it rain and stuff like that. You know who else pops up in this trailer? A guy that we've come to love, Paul Walter Hauser. You may remember him from I, Tonya, or what was that Clint Eastwood film he was in?
Richard Jewell.
Thank you. Richard Jewell, where he played the title character. Love this guy. I'm glad to see he's continuing to get work, man. He's great.
I agree. I mean, the entire cast, I got it pulled up here. You got Leslie Jones in there, Kristen Bell, Kirby Howell Baptiste, and then, as we mentioned, Vince Vaughn, Paul Walter Hauser, and Joel McHale also pops up in this one as well. Yeah, it really comes down to the tone. And I thought that the trailer did a pretty good job of giving us the absurdity of the case, because it is this coupon scam that's going on.
Right. And these are bargain hunting moms who turn into a crime ring. It looks kind of funny.
It does. It looks funny, but I think if it has just the hint of seriousness, because it is based on a true story, it has got some crime involved, I think we could have a hit on our hands.
Yeah, it looks like a Catch Me If You Can, sort of in that same tone.
I'm excited for this one as well. You?
Yeah, I'm ready for this one, for sure.
Two good trailers. Check them out online, and we will be talking about these movies in the near futures. That's our coming attractions, Matt. That's it.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, let's close this fish tank. One segment left, Matt, and that is Stump the Kabinski.
Okay, let's see if you got me. This is the Scarlett Johansson Stump the Kabinski edition. I don't think you can do it, Rye.
Five questions. I'm looking at these questions. I'm going to actually give you a pretty good odds here. I'm going to say you're going to get four of the five correct.
Okay, that means I got to get perfect to beat the odds. All right. Here we go.
Question one. Stump the Kabinski, Scarlett Johansson themed. Here we go. What is the highest grossing film Scarlett Johansson has appeared in?
I mean, it's got to be Endgame. That's my guess.
That is correct. Avengers Endgame. Highest grossing film she has appeared in. That is correct.
Bit of a no-brainer, yeah.
Question two, over to Matt K. This is a tricky one, but it's multiple choice. Which Scarlett Johansson film has the lowest Rotten Tomato score of her career? She just had to appear in the film. Which has the lowest Rotten Tomato score of her career? Was it Home Alone 3, The Island, The Spirit, or The Black Dahlia?
Wow. You had to give me four choices, huh?
Four choices.
Can I use the lifeline and say 50-50 it?
Home Alone 3,
uh-huh.
The Island, The Spirit, or The Black Dahlia?
Okay. It's not The Island. And as crappy as I think Home Alone 3 is, and I think a lot of people probably think it is as well, for some reason, don't think it's that one. Black Dahlia was a big disappointment, but it also probably wasn't the worst of her career. What's the fourth one?
The Spirit.
That was a big downer. We saw that one.
We did do a retro review of that for the Patreons.
I mean, no, but The Spirit, if nothing else, at least kind of had some interesting visuals. So I wonder if that's the lowest. People do hate bad superhero movies. All right. I mean, process of elimination, that's where I'm going. Spirit.
That is correct. The Spirit is the lowest score on Rotten Tomatoes for Scarlett Johansson. It sits at a paltry 14% rotten.
I didn't hate it. I mean, it was pretty bad, but it was at least kind of fun.
Matt is 2 for 2 on Stump the Kabinski. Question three over to you, Matt. Keep it going here, buddy.
All right.
Of these four directors, name the one that Scarlett Johansson has not worked with.
Okay. All right.
All right. Pretty easy. Okay. Yep. Name the director she has not worked with.
Got it.
Your choices are this: Christopher Nolan, Wes Anderson, Michael Bay, Ridley Scott.
Wow. And there's only one that she has not worked with?
Correct. She has not worked with one of those four.
Nolan, Bay, Scott, and who?
Wes Anderson.
Anderson. Nolan, Bay, Scott, and Anderson. I'm pretty sure she did a voice in one of the Wes Anderson stop motion movies. So she worked with Anderson. That leaves Ridley Scott, Michael Bay, and
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan. Okay. Nolan. What did she do with Christopher Nolan? Wow. I don't think she did anything with Christopher Nolan. That's my guess. Nolan.
We have Stumpa Kabinski on question three. She was in The Prestige.
That's right. That's right.
The Prestige. She also worked with Michael Bay in The Island.
She worked with Bay.
And Wes Anderson, you were correct. She voiced one of the characters in Isle of Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But she has not worked with Ridley Scott.
I should have guessed it. All right. Messed up. I thought maybe questions. One of the sci-fi movies she did was his.
Two questions left with you, Matt. Here we go. How many times has Scarlett Johansson worked with the Coen brothers? Your choices are 0, 1, 2, or 3 times. How many times has Scarlett Johansson worked with the Coen brothers? 0, 1, or 2 times, or 3 times?
Man, so at least once, or was it she in Hail Caesar or something? She's not in any of the Coen brothers movies that I am very, very fond of. I'll say once.
Oh, Matt, I tell you, two was the answer. You are right. Hail Caesar. She was also in The Man Who Wasn't There with Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Last question.
You already stumped me, man.
I know.
Odds are not in my favor here.
Son of a gun. Last question on the Stump the Kabinski. Let's get at least 3 out of 5. Here we go. Of these 3 classic actors, which one has Scarlett not worked with? Robert Redford, Jack Nicholson, or Sean Connery? She's worked with 2 of the 3. Which has she not worked with?
Okay, Robert Redford, easy, because he was the villain in Iron Man 2 or 3, one of those Iron Man movies. So she worked with Redford, or maybe it was Captain America. I forget, but he was a Marvel villain. Who was the other two?
Jack Nicholson and Sean Connery.
Jack Nicholson is pretty interesting. Sean Connery is so old. I wonder what she possibly could have acted with him in. Like the last action movie with Sean Connery that I could think of was that one where he's a cat burglar with Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she's got to be 20 years older than Scarlett Johansson. So I'm going to say Sean Connery.
Oh man, we have stumped the Kabinski big time.
What was she in with Sean Connery?
The movie was called Just Cause.
What? I mean, is this when she was a child? Because
she was a child. Yes, it counts, Matt. It counts.
You know, that's a trick
question. It came out in 1995, so 6 years prior to Ghost World. So we're talking 9 years old for Scarlett Johansson. She played the child in Just Cause.
That doesn't count.
It does count. I just told you it does. She did not ever work with Jack Nicholson.
I couldn't think of anything with Jack Nicholson, but I'm like, there's no way she worked with Connery because he's so old.
Oh my goodness. We have stumped the Kabinski. He only gets 2 out of 5.
At least I identified the one that she did with Redford.
Yes. And also, to be fair, she was in The Horse Whisperer also as a kid, and that was a Robert Redford directed and starring vehicle. So she worked with him a long time ago and then with the Marvel films as well.
I miss Mr. Redford. Wish he'd do one more.
Yes, there you go. Brings us to the end of a very fun and Scarlett-filled jaw, as I promised.
Hey, man, we do what we say and we say what we do.
First and foremost, we got to thank our sponsors.
Yes, thanks to Overcast and to the Chicago Podcast Co-op who help us get great sponsors like Overcast.
If you want to support CinemaJaw, the easiest way to do so is by leaving us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast.
While you're doing that review, please click subscribe. It helps us out way more than you think. It's just one little extra button from you. Please do.
Until next week, I'm Ry the Movie Guy.
And I'm Matt Kay.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
That's a wrap, man. All right, man.
I'll see you.
A good one.
We always feel very well supported by our jawheads. Nah, I don't want to start with that.
Like a good pair of underwear, Rye.
Perfect around the waist. All right.